Hello everyone, welcome to Road to Cheltenham. We are back in the studio with plenty of action to discuss from the past 7 days. Fingers crossed that the weather permits me to be able to say that this time next week. Of course, Ruby Walsh is alongside me. Ruby, welcome.
I hadn't thought about that. What are we going to talk about if the weather forecast is right?
I have plenty up my sleeve, don't you worry. You probably should be worried about that. Should we go straight into it?
Let's crack on.
Honeysuckle. The eclipse of honeysuckle. It had to happen sometime because, and that's a compliment as to how they campaign her.
Yeah, it had to, but you still don't want it to happen. Or I didn't want it to happen.
No, anyway. I didn't want it to happen.
But it has to happen. It did happen. And did she run much below last year? Look, time will tell. Here she's on the outside, uses the position where Rachel usually rides her, a bit high at the first, nothing unusual about that. But did her body language ever scream to you that she was really, really happy? Not to me, especially here. Gives her a squeeze and when she lands, never stiffens the reins. I was worried from that early myself, watching it live. Missed the fifth hurdle. Clumsy-like. Now, we saw her make mistakes before, but never at any stage did I look at Rachel Blackmore and think she's trying to slow Honeysuckle down.
Yeah.
She didn't. To me, she was always trying to make her go, get her on the bridle, make her go forward. Her two main dangers, of course, her three main dangers, were lined up right behind her. And the interesting one is Echoes and Rain at the back in the green and red. She was incredibly free through the race. Paul Townend and Jack Kennedy just put a target on Honeysuckle's back. And when were they going to come and take it off her? She moves through to the second last. I think this angle is deceptive. When she jumps, Rachel's body language straight away and she goes for a whip. I think Paul Townend's actually right up beside her by now. Only we're looking at it from side on, not over her head or from behind. And they're gone by her going to the last hurdle. She briefly looks like she's going to rally when she lands, but Jack and Paula come stand side and they fight it out. Good performance from Tihipu, the five-year-old. Nice comeback run for Classical Dream. But how far below is Honeysuckle run? Well, she's 30-odd lengths in front of Ashtel Bob.
I think she wasn't as good as last year, but is that an unrecognisable Honeysuckle run? I don't think so, no. I thought it was a pretty good performance. First time out, she's just beaten.
Just beaten. It was just better opposition she faced this year than she probably has in the past. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. And she'll roll on to Leopardstown. She's often been a better mare on her second start. Hopefully she will be. Did Nicky Henderson not sleep on Sunday night? I doubt it.
No. I suppose the thing that worried me was in the run, that mistake that you highlighted, the fact that she wasn't able to stretch Ashdale Bob when she was asked to on the home term, and the jumping was a bit more reminiscent of Honeysuckle two seasons ago rather than the slicker Honeysuckle that we saw last season.
Yeah, possibly, but she didn't look like she was travelling as well. Softer ground probably too, you know, and it was an even enough gallop, so I don't know, am I that worried? Do I see her winning another champion hurdle? I'm afraid I don't. I'd love her to, but I don't see it happening right now. But I think she could win at Leopardstown.
OK, we'll come back to Tihipu and Classical Dream in a moment. First of all, we've got an observational tweet from Gareth, one of the 61 million Gareths who follow this show. I cannot wait for Ruby to analyse the Hatton's Grace. I couldn't help but think that Rachel stopped her momentum after going in front and then didn't pick back up as the other two stalked her and quickened. Maybe overconfident or maybe being careful to save her for the festival.
Where? When? Do you watch the same race as us?
Yeah. I mean, I think she was... She was careful at the last to give it one last go to make, you know, because of the way that she had been jumping.
But she's behind at the last.
Absolutely.
So I don't really get your point, Gareth. She pinged the second last, and I think the camera angle is deceptive. I'd say Classical Dream and Tihipu were on top of her or by her before you thought they were.
No argument. No argument at all. But that verve we were talking about, the way of going, I just wanted to maybe contrast her with the champion hurdle from last year.
Yeah, and even through the air, a bit of speed down here behind the preset. Now, I know these were quick then this time. It wasn't that strong your run race. She jumps in there, excuse me, and goes between Appreciated and Zana here much easier. And Rachel's body language is much more confident than it ever was on Sunday.
OK. Let's have a look at the impact on the anti-post markets. Obviously, the champion hurdle is the obvious one. Constitution Hill is now 2-5. Honeysuckle is 6-1. Best price, 8-1, if you hunt around. She is 5-1, vying with Epitant and Brandy Love for the Close Brothers' David Nicholson mare's hurdle. Bit of an insult, that, isn't it?
I couldn't see her going. I can't see her stepping back down to the mare's hurdle.
Oh, I hope not.
I would be shocked. I think she'll run here. She's now, I actually think that they'll maybe Henry, Rachel, owners, connections, with the pressure of that unbeaten tag gone, might enjoy her a bit more.
I know what you mean. I mean, usually, and not in Honeysuckle's case, but usually an unbeaten run can often be the sign of uncompetitive campaigning. Yeah, that tends to be what it says.
And the stifling pressure of expectation, that's gone from them all. I think that actually will make it a bit more enjoyable for them all.
I thought that Kenny Alexander spoke very well as well, contextualising her defeat afterwards.
Would you expect any different?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah,
but
would I?
Even so, it was very, very good what he had to say. Let's have a look at the stayers hurdle betting. And through this prism, we can discuss Tehupo, who is 12-1, Antipost, and Classical Dream, who is 5-1. Behind Flooring Porter, the title holder and dual winner. Classical Dream tends to be at his best fresh, doesn't he? Isn't that a typical first-time out effort?
It is a typical first-time out effort. He beat Flooring Porter last year. Look, Gordon is on about going here with Tehupo. Maybe he's the overpriced one. Six-year-old by the spring. Yeah, he's probably... Where does Classical Dream make it up? I mean, they were both first-time out. Very little between them. So I'd say the odds there are probably too far apart for me.
I suppose what people might be thinking about is that both Jack Kennedy and Gordon Elliott mentioned that Tehupo needs some deep ground, basically, that kind of ground. And would you, I know you can get it at Cheltenham these days, but will you necessarily get it?
It depends. I mean, if Gordon makes John Poole and water again, maybe they will.
It was good to see the horse bounce back, though, because he'd finished stone cold last in the Champion Hurdle and the equivalent at the Punchestown Festival, hadn't
yes,
he?
Yes, but difficult year. That 4 into 5 year compared to now, stronger horse, 5 into 6. It'll be much more rewarding for him.
You mentioned Echoes in Rain, who typically tanked through the race before falling, I think, for the first time in her life, 2 out, I think it was.
Yeah. Felt the second half. She was way too keen. So, you know, she's OK afterwards, so hopefully she's a runner in the mare, sort of.
Yeah. That's what you'd be immediately thinking
big
after
time,
that.
Yeah. Hood back on, maybe.
Yes, but she's never learned to settle in her career, really, has she?
She has. They took the hood off because Patrick said she was too settled last year.
Ah, sorry. Right, OK. And now it needs to be back on again.
It looked that. Maybe that couple of runs on the flat might have revved her up. That'll be a decision for them to make.
OK. Let's talk about Love en Voix, because she could be headed for the Mayor's Hurdle as well, and she's made her return at Sandown in Handicap Company, always towards the fore.
She was rocked up to the first hurdle. Marta Tor making his debut for Venetia Williams, landed up on the outside and took the race over. Now, I thought Johnny Burke, half it on the back, was nearly going as fast as he wanted to be going in Love en Voix, but Marta Tor capsized into the straight, good jump at the second last, and this mare grinds it out, because the skeleton horse behind under Keelan Woods really does come at Love en Voix, but she stayed at it well, and you can see a step up in trip really suiting her. She was a winner at Cheltenham last year in the new course over 2-1, so 2.5 on the old course would look the obvious place for her.
Yes, Harry Fry was pretty clear about where he was going to go with her next. Back to Sandown on Tolworth Day for a listed mare's hurdle, then a similar contest at Warwick and then Cheltenham. So her season is pretty much mapped out for her.
It is.
The Brandy Love that she met at Punchestown, where she thumped her, Love en Voix was thumped by Brandy Love. Do you forgive Love en Voix at all?
I do. Brandy Love, or not Brandy Love, Love en Voix even had gone and won at Cheltenham, and Brandy Love had missed Cheltenham, came to Fairhurst a bit fresher, but you'd have to think Brandy Love would be better going left-handed.
Yeah, agree. While we're talking about mares, let's have a look at the international hurdle declarations. This is the Unibet-sponsored contest, a Grade 2 on Saturday, hopefully, if Cheltenham goes ahead. Now, the covers are down with frost forecast, and frost already there, down to -5 overnight on Thursday into Friday, possibly even -6 in the early hours of Saturday. And John Pullin, the clerk of the course there, is even talking about putting the covers down during the day on the shoot on Friday in order to try and prepare for Saturday. This is really tricky. That's what Epatant would face were it to go ahead. First Street is there, which slightly surprises me, her stable companion, and Nappers Hill as well.
Yeah, look, First Street, Nappers Hill, and I Like to Move are both improving second season novices trying to get up to Epatant's level. It'll be a good race, 4 decent horses, and it'll be an interesting one. And I prefer my forecast to yours. Mine says -4. I'm not having your forecast.
I prefer your forecast too. Let's check my forecast in the bin.
Nah.
That'd be much better. How do you see that being run?
I Like to Move it, probably. Mm-hmm. Balled away in the Greatwood. I can see First Street just tracking him. Nappers Hill won't be too far away. Epatant, probably follow him and come at them.
The only reason I was surprised about...
Need me if you can, lads.
The only reason I was surprised about First Street being there was that Nicky Henderson seemed to be intimating that he had quite a hard race in the Jerry
film. I thought
film.
He did too, but obviously he's showing the right signs at home.
Must be. But the fact that Epitant is there, that suggests that she might not be going for a Christmas hurdle, which suggests that Constitution Hill might be, which suggests he might not be going for the Matheson, which would be a shame.
I think you can do the maths, Lydia. You're definitely getting two and two, getting the same four as me.
Good, as long as it's not five. Let's move on to the staying chasers. Staying chasers now, as I said. And first up, I need to give props to my co-presenter, Ruby Walsh, definitely promoted to co-presenter now. After 66-1, Noble Yates for the Gold Cup, eh?
Do you think I'll win Nick Lux Award next year for that?
If you keep trying, maybe. Got on the shortlist.
No one ever tell you second is nowhere.
Yes, you do repeatedly. Let's talk about the many clouds chase, shall we? And Noble Yates looking very, very good indeed. Back to the sister course of his Grand National victory.
Yeah, but that race, this race even, was tarnished by that. Hoisting your first fence and the second fence again. It just, I don't know, his brain and his feet don't always work at the same time, I think it's the best way of putting it, into the back straight. I don't know what happens to Chantry House here, James Bowen. You can't really see it. Doesn't look to do a huge amount wrong, gets rid of James. But across here to the cross fence, watch Ahoy Senor's head. He's looking inside, yet he's going to jump the other way. I just think he's a difficult ride for Derek Fox, and maybe with a few more runs under his belt, he could come back. But I found him frustrating to watch on Saturday, to tell you the truth. Dashiell Dasher jumped into the race early in the back straight and made it a good test, but it was Noble Yates' really good jump and they kept him in it. He's pretty much looks like he's on as fast as he can there, but he never missed a beat anywhere. His jumping was spectacular. Third last fence again, jumps in behind. Looks like Dashiell Dasher's the one here. Second last, but watch Sean Bowen on landing. Whipping his left hand, he's only used it three times. But the response isn't spectacular or immediate. And now when he switches it over to his right, you can see this horse taking off. It's just like he sprouted wings.
It's extraordinary. I remember watching this live and thinking it's between Dashiell Dasher and Ahoy Senor. Sadly, unfortunately, probably Dashiell Dasher winning. And then that happened.
Yeah, it was just a turn of foot. Now he's jumping. Look, he was value at 66-1 in the Gold Cup. At 10-1, I'm not so sure. Pace-wise, he'd want to have as much as he has, but his jumping is rock solid. And as long as his jumping holds up, it could keep him in that kind of race.
Yeah.
Now, where is he going to go next? Leopardstown would look made for him.
Right, OK. Because when Emmett Mullins was interviewed by Gary O'Brien, he was not counting out King George, which he is still in. But why do you think Leopardstown would be so suitable?
Loads of jumping in the back straight, and then it's a stamina track compared to Kempton.
Mm-hmm.
It does two horses that stay, and I think the one thing that fella does, by Yates, is stay forever. Or ever in a day.
I know what you mean about the Gold Cup. It's going to rely on him. Can he hang on in there against better horses, presumably going a better pace? Not that it was that strongly run last year.
No, the majority of Gold Cups are. And it's if he can just hang on, and then have that turn of foot off the home turn. But I think he's tailor-made for Leopardstown. If he was mine, that's where he'd be going anyway.
We'll return to Ahoy Senor in a minute, but Dashiell Dasher, I just want to doff my cap to him. He's such an admirable
horse. He is, isn't he?
Yeah.
And does he really get the trip?
Well, that was the first time he's tried 3 mile one. He's never been as far as that.
And you can't knock him for it. And he is a very admirable campaigner.
Let's have a look at the betting, the impact as a result of not only Noble Yates winning, but of course, obviously, Ruby tipping him up. He is 8-1 for the King George, 10-1 for the Gold Cup. Brave Man's Game remains the favourite for the King George at 5-4. He's available at 14s for the Gold Cup. The favourite for that contest, of course, is Galloping Deschamps, who we will be hoping to see on Sunday. And we will be discussing later on in the show. But first of all, I don't want to leave the many clouds without getting Liam Firkin to ask his question.
Hi both. My question this week is about getting horses to jump straight. I'm thinking quite specifically about Ahoy Senor. He seems to lose so many lengths jumping out to his right. So I wondered if you could discuss what training methods or aids can be put in place back at the yard to get that horse jumping straight. I wondered if there's anything you could put to the right-hand side of the horse, for example, during schooling, in order to stop him from jumping out to his right. Thanks also to Ruby for his 66-1 tip last week. I'm sat in a nice ticket with Noble Yates. So I look forward to his 66-1 plus tip this week. Cheers.
No pressure there.
You're greedy, isn't he?
He is a bit, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Give them something, they take a yard.
Oh.
Not at all impressed, Liam.
Right, jumping right or left or whatever. What can you do?
Not very much. And most horses do it because they have to go right or left to give themselves the space to take the half stride that's required when a horse gets close. And look, a lot of horses can do that in a straight line, but some will shimmy one direction or the other, and it's to find room to move their feet. You can try and school them as close to a right-hand side of a fence if you want to stop them going right, but like even York Hill would have been the other side. You'd school them right down the left, or not right down the left, you go bang down the left-hand side, and on the approach to the fence, you'd feel him drifting to the right so he could jump left. but that's what horses do. And often, if you put them into a space like a High Signor where he can't go right, some of them can't get off the ground then. Mm. If they haven't got the space, they gallop straight on. So look, I always thought Cotto would be a better horse going right-handed or going left-handed than he was right, because he always jumped to his left. Yet, records don't tell you he was any better going the other way around.
Whereas you have other horses like Denman, for example, who would jump dead straight.
Arrow straight. Papillon. What else? Vatour.
Undeso.
Like gun barrel straight. It's just to do with their physical makeup. And some horses do go a direction. Well, some can be hurting, but they, to me, over a period of time, go a direction because that's where they need to find the space to get a half straight.
And I agree with you. I think it can sometimes be indicative of needing to go left-handed or right-handed, or preferring to, rather. Yeah. But sometimes it isn't always that. So no, you have to sort of see a pattern over time as to what a horse likes.
It is. And I know I rode him down the inside in the Gold Cup, but there always was a little bit of room to go to his left. I made sure and gave him a tiny bit of space to make sure he had room just to go left. Because if you box a horse that wants to go one way or the other into a corner, they usually don't get high enough.
Are there any aids that can help at all?
At different bits, chifney bit, ring bit. You can try.
So explain to everyone what the difference between a chifney bit and a ring bit is.
A chifney bit or a bar bit would be just a bar up the side of it. I don't particularly like them. I think horses lie on them. Whereas a chifney bit probably does give you a bit more control. It's a bit, I suppose, not severe, but you definitely have more use or more. The horse is more responsive in his mouth to what your hands are doing. But again, if you're trying to keep them straight, not a whole pile you can do.
And I suppose if a horse suddenly starts doing something like that, it might be indicative of an underlying problem.
An alarm bell will start ringing with a lot of people.
Yeah. So it's kind of context, really.
It's not black or white, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Liam, I hope that has answered your question. I think that was really good. Thank you very much. I've learned plenty there as well. Let's move on to the Sunday, shall we? In the Peterborough Chase, Pick Dawhey, beautiful ride here.
Good ride from the front, Harry Cobden, and his pace throughout the race, if you watch it back on the sections of the clocks yourselves, it was solid and even through the first mile and a half. He started building away from the stands, but even the pace he kept to quicken this from the top of the straight down over the second last, this is early in the race, he was really good jumping Pick Dawhey. Now, where he fits in to Paul Nicholls' picture with Hitman and Brave Man's Game, I'm not so sure. First Law was a bit keen. Miller's Bank was his usual self, clouted a couple and eventually started to get going. But I thought Harry controlled him really, really cleverly from the front. Mr. Fisher, I can't remember the horse name, they made a mistake there in the orange and black. That was...
Do Your Job.
But it was the speed that Harry was able to inject into the race from the top of the home straight. That wasn't brilliant at the second last, was good at the last, and he just held the others off. Peterborough winners, I'm not sure.
He can look very good, but he can also throw in a lot of mistakes. I think he can throw in a sudden one, and I think if he was in a big, busy field, his jumping might not be as reliable as that.
Mightn't be, but I think Harry read that race correctly, tactics-wise, and was able to get in front and control it. But he went quick enough that the others were happy enough to follow him too. And I think in a lot of races, he'd be able to control it going the speed he was going.
Now, how about Brave Sheska, who won in handicap company at Aintree on Saturday? But he didn't forget to win, did he?
No, he absolutely bolted up. But his jumping early in the race wasn't great. Gavin Sheehan rode him, was OK at the first and at the second as well. Wasn't spectacular for a horse that had been running over 2 miles. He did look a bit cumbersome, but he warmed into it. And by the time he got to the third last, he's doing an absolute half speed down the inside. Jumped that well, pings the second last to land in front. His jumping had got much better. And to me, he's won with any amount in hand. Great trend performance, but that's two top weights backing up the Venetia Williams one handicaps with Lompressa last week, Brave Sheska this week. There's a post question marks about the middle rung of English horses that the top weights are bolting it.
Well, Possibly, apart from weight-carrying performance. I mean, if you look at Trishan on the flat, it's...
We're not looking at the flat, we're talking about chasers.
But class is an indefinable thing. And if you're kind of... That, to me, is a horse that is above that grade, running in that grade. He just happens to have top weight. I mean, he couldn't deal with 2 miles in the Arkle. He made a lot of mistakes. He looks much more comfortable.
Fell, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good performance, though.
He's pushing into graded company, isn't he?
Definitely.
OK, so that's what happened with the chasers over the weekend. We've got more action, fingers crossed, this weekend, and the return of Galopin de Champ is particularly exciting in the John Durkin. Here are the entries to that grade one at Punchestown over 2.5 miles. And we're expecting Galopin de Champ and Statler. Who else do we expect to be there?
I would imagine Fakhar Dudari, Fury Road, and outside of that, I am not 100% certain.
So, given those four that you've identified, how are you envisaging? Is Galopin de Champ just going to go forward?
He will. He won't be too far away. French Dynamite didn't make it into Paddy Power, so probably be hard to see him making it. But yeah, Galopin is straightforward. If something wants to go faster than him, he can get a lead, and if they don't, he can make the run.
Yeah, good luck if anything does want to go faster than him. And has everything been gone straightforwardly with him?
He's in great form. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he is the key. We've seen all the horses that are rivals to him come back and put up some very good performances, like a Protectorat and L'Empresse and even Brave Man's Game. And Noble Yates now has entered the fray as well, and I'm sure I've missed one as well.
Plutar blew out. But look, it's only 2.5 on Sunday, so hopefully it all goes to plan.
OK, so that is the staying chases. When you rejoin us, there'll be time for Analyse This.
The From the Horses Mouth podcast every Friday. Fran Berry looking at Dundalk. We're on the road to Cheltenham now, though, Fran. So let's tell the road to Cheltenham viewers and listeners why they should be listening to us.
Yeah, look, fantastic show on a Thursday night, but the main action all weekend is Dundalk on a Friday night. Listen to our podcast, PK. We'll find winners in Dundalk. If it all goes pear-shaped, it's also known as the Road to Ruin. And Rory and Roy Delargy and Ruby also do a bit of tipping on the weekend as well. Quite a good show, not as good as the Dundalk effort, though.
There is some jumps racing on the weekends, but Friday Dundalk is key. Fran Berry, listen out for us. We'll pass back to Lydia and Ruby, who know a few things about racing.
So the options for Analyse this week were Michael O'Sullivan on Marine Nationale, Jack Kennedy for his ride aboard Tihupu, Harry Cobden for Pick Dory, and Ben Bromley on Call Me Lord at Sandown last week. And you voted for Michael O'Sullivan and Marine Nationale, 60% of you. Only picked Harry Cobden, only getting 2%. Bit harsh on Harry, I would think. But anyway, Marine Nationale is the selection. And most people have chosen this for the middle to the end of the race. But I think what was most important was what Michael did at the start. Down the inside, in the box seat on Marine Nationale, Paul Townend, Jack Kennedy, Danny Mullins, Keith Donoghue, all outside him. Jack got pole position in a Grade 1 race. Now, it was going swimmingly for him early on, but when the time to get up to Ballyhacked, about the sixth hurdle, down the inside in the white cap, Hercule Desoy, he misses, and that actually pushes Marine Nationale back out of the race, right back beside Astro Diamond and Patrick Mullins, so he's lost that good position. But you have to ride what cards you're dealt, how it pans out in front of you. And Michael quickly adapted and gradually got himself back into position, but he found himself in the pocket. Jack rides up on the outside in Irish Point, Paul is in front on Champ Kylie, Patch is coming around the outside in Ashore Diamond, but Michael Sullivan never panics, stays where he is. And as they get down to the second last hurdle, Marine Nationale starts to quicken up, and the race is quickening and developing in front of him, but he never goes to barge Patrick Mullins out here. He stays where he is, he's taking his medicine, he's happy to follow Paul and Jack down over the second last and wait for a cap to come. The gap does come on the landing side and he goes to chase Irish Point. Now the second last hurdle is well inside the two pole. You can see that disappearing in the distance. It's a short enough run to the last hurdle. He switches when he gets the gap, but he's going to miss the last. Now he does then need a little bit of luck that every jockey needs, in that he has a long enough run in to get up. But it was a very patient ride. He was always in the right place. And to me, most importantly, when Hercule Desoy made the mistake, he was able to adapt his tactics and play the cards that he was dealt.
So it was Michael's first Grade 1 success, and he wasn't even able to use his claim in that race, was he?
No, he wasn't. But again, he's a bit of age on his side. He's not
16. He's 22, I think he is. He's a lot of experience as an amateur before that. He's a university degree as well, I think.
So you think it was a bit like Rachel having had all of that experience before she came through?
Everybody and every young person, not to be young people watch this show, but every young person's in a hurry. But look at the last few successful people.
Mm.
Patience comes to those who wait.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And also a first grade one win as a trainer for Barry Connell.
Yeah, he obviously owned a winner of that race many years ago with the Tullow Tank, but a huge achievement for him to train him, won him. What do you want, a bumper now? Two bumpers, a maiden hurdle and a grade one. So great performance from Barry too and all his team.
And before we leave analyse this, just a quick word on what happened to Ben Bromley mistaking the winners in post with David Maxwell getting up on Dolphin Square.
At least he saw a winning post. I jumped the water jump in Stratford one day. Imagine not seeing the water jump. That happens. and there is two winning posts in Sandown, did you?
Yeah.
And there is two winning posts in Sandown for the very reason that the chase course comes from one angle and the hurdle track comes from another angle, so there has to be two winning posts. Should one be down at a given time? Probably.
It's for the photo finishes to get the right angle.
It has to be for the angle. There has to be two different winning posts.
Yeah.
But should they both be up all day? That's debatable.
OK, agreed. So that was Analyse This. We're sticking with the theme of novice hurdlers. You've seen Analyse This. We're now going to have a look at one of your tweets before we move into the section we promised you last week, which is a proper tender loving care towards the novice hurdlers. This is from Tony Kay, Ruby. He was massively impressed with Marine Nationale, who we've just seen. Reminded me of Hurricane Fly nailing Solwit at the Punchestown Festival back in 2010.
They weren't novices.
I suppose, do they have to be novices for him to? I'm always surprised when you can sort of compare two finishes like that to such a degree. You're just not having that tweet, are you? You're not having that tweet, OK. Tony Fail, sorry. Sorry, that didn't float Ruby's boat. What? There might be a tweet at some point during this programme that you actually like.
But like, if you at least give me two novices to compare them to.
Can we just briefly talk about the Royal Bond? They went far too fast. I think actually we've got something we can illustrate that with, can't we? Because there were 3 2-mile hurdles that day. There was the Royal Bond, the Juvenile and the 2-mile Handicap. Lossie Math won the Juvenile, Merlin Giant won the 2-mile Handicap.
Yeah, and obviously the top race is the Juvenile, where they go really, really slow. Ahaboy makes the running in that one. Bottom left, you've Herklin the Sly, but Prairie Dancer was the one who really forced the pace here. Herklin is quite keen and Prairie Dancer goes with him. And then the bottom right, then Danny Mullins let Flaming Moon roll along in the Handicap hurdle, but the body of the field didn't follow Flaming Moon, whereas the body of the field is with Herklin the Sly in the bottom left and they're not in the Royal Bond. So, yeah, the Royal Bond, there was no hiding place in it and they did streak along. Down from Ballyhack here, bottom left is the most interesting one. When Herklin the Sly makes the mistake, look for Paul Townend in the green and blue colours behind Prairie Dancer. On the outside of the shot, you can see how keen Gallop and the Champ, or Champ Kylie gets on landing, and he pulls his way between Prairie Dancer and Polo Lounge there to keep that pace up. Now, you know they're a mile in front of the Juvenile, which probably didn't suit Zarak the Brave in the same manner Suede colours down the inside, because he had won a really strongly run Juvenile at Ferryhouse. This was a sprint, and Lossie Mouth was the quickest in the sprint. Flaming Moon in the bottom right falls in a hole before they turn in, but you can see now how far Champ Kylie, etc., they're a good bit in front of the Handicap, because the red marker hasn't appeared. They're off the end of the rail, and here comes Merlin Giant coming to the end of the rail now. Lossie Mouth's coming off the same time as him after going much slower. So, you know, a lot of people may be saying Merlin Giant's a novice, compare him to the others. I think it's very hard. I think he only had to do enough to win under Dunne Myler. The Royal Bond, time will tell whether Marine Nationale can keep improving. Recent Royal Bond winners, obviously you had NYLN, but there's been a few only OK winners of the Royal Bond in recent times, and Lossie Mouth absolutely flew from the last, but I don't think the top race was just run to suit Zarak the Brave.
Yes, we'll talk about the Juveniles in more detail next week, I think, because there are two significant Juvenile contests again, hopefully one at Cheltenham, and also we have the Summit at Doncaster as well, so we'll discuss Lossie Mouth properly next week. But the Royal Bond, I think, as you say, Champ Keeley really carted into the race, and I think he deserves marking up. I also think, not to the same degree, but Irish Point needs a little bit of marking up as well, because he too made his move earlier. And maybe all that shuffling back that happened to Michael O'Sullivan actually, given the way the race was won, worked in his favour in the end?
Well, it makes jockeys make decisions. So Mikey loses his position on the inside and Jack, who was behind him, is going forward. It automatically makes Jack think, well, you got him back there, keep him back there. Mm. And, you know, Patrick follows suit then in Astro Diamond. So that's just reactions. They're what happens. But Cham Kiley, he didn't settle and got involved way too soon.
Yeah, he did. And I think he is quite a bit better than that. Barry Connolly is talking about definitely missing Christmas with the winner, but maybe even missing the Dublin Racing Festival. And he's mentioned those dreaded words, straight to Cheltenham for the Supreme.
Yeah, that's his second run as a novice. Cheltenham, then Punchestown would be four runs, but he won't be a novice next year. And if you can probably make more use of your novice status, maybe to help.
He had a couple of goes on as a bumper horse, didn't he, twice over the summer?
Two, yeah.
Yeah. And they also think that, I mean, I can understand...
They do on better ground, and they were very surprised, and Barry even said it on any channel he was interviewed before the race. He didn't fancy Marine National on the ground at all, so you can fully understand him not wanting to race in the depths of winter, and if that's the road he's choosing to go, fair play to him.
Final comment about Merlin Giant. Obviously, Flaming Moon went off far too fast. Did sort of drag them through to some degree, even though they largely ignored him. He went hard-held, though, didn't he?
He did, but he's most likely to go back to the Galway Hurdle next year.
Yeah, yeah. That's what Emmett Mullins was saying afterwards. A fantastic weekend for Emmett Mullins with Bantan Noble Yates. Yeah. Right, before we move back from Sunday to Saturday at Fairy House last weekend, we need to make a point about the two tracks, lest that's been overlooked by anybody.
Yeah, it's just track management, and Fairy House have a lot of ground, but they do manage it well. This is Flatside Vega on Saturday. You can see the hurdle behind them, but the hurdle outside and the right, that was Sunday's track. I know it's Fairy House, but they're two different race courses. There's three or four race courses in Fairy House, but you cannot compare Saturday to Sunday last weekend.
How different are they to ride, or are they...
No, they're not. It's obviously you're out wider, so the bends are a bit longer. And then you have the complete inside track in Fairy House too. But I would say Sunday's track is probably a better track than Saturday's.
OK. Right, so now that takes us to Saturday, and we're going to compare and contrast Fasal Vega and Joe Machin. Now, obviously, Fasal Vega, everybody thinks, is the next coming, the new Constitution Hill. But essentially, in this race, they're slow and slower, aren't they?
Yeah, they didn't go hard. It was raining. Goodland got rid of Mike Sullivan at the first. Now, we started these two races together. So, you know, don't think we're playing one off the other. But by the time they get to the second, you can see how far behind Fasal Vega is of Joe Machin's race. But look, obviously Jack Kennedy was getting carted along on Kansas City Star, and Paul Townend behind in the stripes, and Viva De Vito, he too was racing quite keenly, whereas Fasal Vega's having a solo in front. Now, I know if I was Paul Townend, I'd be doing pretty much what he's doing in Fasal Vega. That's what you're allowed doing. But on the right, you can see in Chris Jones's colours, the maroon and white stripes, that Viva De Vito is about to tank Paul Townend into the race when Kansas City Star runs off that bend, and that's what keeps the first division of the Maiden Hurdle at a stronger tempo than what Fasal Vega was doing. He's rounded by the seven. These others are a long way in front. Here they are turning in. Viva De Vito's about to fall in a hole, but Joyu Mashan, to be fair to him, who looked like he was off the bridle at the third last, he comes home really strongly. There's no doubt about that. What does Fasal Vega do? He just wins. I mean, what more can Paul Townend do? And what I loved about him was down here to the second last, Paul knows he's quickening up and he wants to slow down, but to me, he wasn't able to slow him down. Mm. The whole way from the bend to the second last hurdle, as hard as Paul was trying, Fasal Vega just wanted to go faster.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I know,
because
so
that
would
is
I.
glacial.
Yeah, it is, but like, I know what you're saying. I would hope so too, but it was good performance from Joyu Mashan, and I thought Fasal Vega was very impressive.
I think he was very promising. It's sort of like, that is a classic visuals performance, isn't it? As opposed to a clock performance. There is nothing about that on the clock, but it still said, this is a horse of great ability. We know that from what he's done as a bumper horse. And clearly he's rated very highly at a yard that have got lots of very good measuring sticks.
Yeah, it is. And to me, it is visuals, as you said, but it's usually visually a good sign when the jockey can't slow the horse down.
Yes, but yeah. What were the rest of them doing? It was very deferential, wasn't it? No, after you, Fasal Vega. No, go. You have a run round by yourself. It wasn't going that quick.
No, he wasn't. But your objective in any race is to obtain your best possible finishing position. And I would say on bumper form, most of those couldn't beat Fasal Vega, so they were trying to finish second.
It was a procession. Talking of which, let's link to Tremor and Gaelic Warrior, shall we?
This was a procession. And look, in fairness, he didn't get it an absolute solo in front. I mean, at least they did lead him here up over the first. Little unseat there. Second time round, he jumps to the front himself. but it's more interesting by the time he gets around on the third circuit. That's not him, by the way.
No.
There he is there.
That made me laugh. He was so far in front, the camera didn't quite catch him on the second last.
I mean, like, he was, I wouldn't say unlucky in last year's Fred Winter. I would say, had it been run on Wednesday's ground, I think he'd have won the Fred Winter. I would say the good ground caught him out last year.
You don't think it had anything to do with him adjusting right all the time?
I'd say it was the ground. Well, that helped that. Why did he adjust right? He didn't really adjust right in Tramore. I think it was the quick ground on the first day
But Tramore was right-handed and Cheltenham's old course is quite tight. That's the thing for me. It's just sort of where does he wind up at Cheltenham and where would you prefer to see him?
I would say just where he needs the ground. A lot will depend on what fast side he gets.
It does.
Yeah.
Do you know how he's likely to be campaigned or do you have a view on how he should be
I think
campaigned?
He'd get further.
Right.
Gaelic Warrior, yeah. I think 4 years a stay, Lydia, has to get all or 10-1 further. I'd have no problem going further with him.
OK. And so everything would be in the mix with him in terms of novices and handicaps as well, presumably?
Yeah.
At the back end of the season?
I'd be surprised if he goes handicapping. Maybe not, back not end of the season. No. Maybe at the end of the season, but yeah. I'd be surprised if he doesn't go into a graded novice now.
OK. Let's move on to back to Britain for Sandown on the Friday, and we can see Henri the second. Now, this horse was winning in Grade 2 company, having been beaten by Chianti Classico, beaten him at Chepstow, and that horse had just gone in with a penalty the day before at Market Raisin.
Yeah, and it was a little bit keen early for Harry Cobb, and he dropped him in at the back, but by the time they got back around to the fourth last hurdle, he's travelling really, really well and moves through the race ominously to the second last hurdle, where he comes to win the race, jumps it, only okay, but at least picks up then, and it's hard enough in Sandown to pick up against the hill when the ground is testing, and he did show good battling qualities, and I think Paul Nicholls and Harry Cobden liked him, and look, visually that's not massively impressive, but it's hard to be visually impressive at Sandown.
He kind of looks like a chaser, don't you think? Sort of he's built that way.
What's the build of a chaser?
I just impressed me as a, I don't know, I suppose when I saw him I put chasing type, but maybe I'm too narrow.
That, I always thought that looking at big books too, but it never worked out.
No, didn't quite, did it?
Nope.
Let's move on to Sandown on the Saturday. This is Authorised Speed for the Moors. This horse, after this victory, has the Tolworth as a target.
Yeah, and he was always travelling enthusiastically, this fella. He was in Jamie's hands, jumps the first, moves up closer. Time he gets middle ways down the back, he's wanting to go faster all the time, this fella. Second last then, jumps this nicely and starts the motor on, and he has the race in the bag when he crashes through the last. But again, I think if you look at the clocks, the speeds, etc., things like that, I was amazed at how much this fella picked up again after this mistake. Mm-hmm. And that's what I liked about him. He flattens this, he's spot on, and to be fair, he probably should have picked up, crashes through it, but he manages to regain his momentum, and I always think that's a good sign.
Afterwards, they were talking, the Moors were saying that he was a proper soft ground horse, hence the Tolworth, which makes logical sense. Of course, he ran really well in the bumper at Cheltenham the back end of last season behind Fasal Vega.
He did.
Finishing fifth. And he was carrying a penalty to victory there. Aintree at Saturday saw strong leader winning for Ollie Murphy and Sean Bowen, again carrying a penalty.
Yeah, and this horse did it really, really easily. I'm not sure the strength and depth of this form, of Aintree's form. He sat in the pocket down the inside. The winner, or his horse that finished second, wasn't that highly rated, but look, jumps the second last and scoots through on the inside here. Always came around, comes back on the bridle readily and quickens away to win. That's his, he had race fitness, he'd already won a novice hurdle this season. He's going to have to step up on that. Not sure the form was that strong, but visually again, as he starts to quicken here, it's quite impressive.
Yes, I was interested to hear Ollie Murphy saying that jumping hasn't come naturally to this horse, and so they've been sort of he's been a work in progress. He did want to sort of hang out to his left. He's a bit green, so
yeah,
there was some promise to it.
Yeah, jumpers win races. Better jumpers getting beaten, mind.
Chepstow, I want to mention to you. Knowsley Road managed to win there. Made all to beat Future Investment.
Yeah, and the third horse was well fancied as well. Kept galloping well for Paul Nicholls and Larkin Williams. Yeah, he's going the right direction.
We can take a look at Knowsley Road from Exeter. The only clip that we've got about him is when he was running in a bumper, but he's got a progressive overall profile and he was ridden to victory on Saturday at Chepstow by Lorcan Williams for Paul Nicholls. Right, America, we're going to go a little bit back in time because we mentioned to you in previous episodes that we were going to have a proper look at the novice hurdles. So the ones from now on are ones that really have caught our eye from a little bit further back.
A couple of weeks back, and we kind of had to overlook them or move on because of time restraints on different programmes. But I like this guy at American Sniper won at Taunton.
Yep.
I thought there was a couple of displays in this programme. Jumped a bit to his left at times, or right, I can't remember, it's that long since I watched it. But I did, which way does he go?
Left.
Yeah, but I did like him down the home straight. Now the second horse, it's how far these two pull clear of the third. It looks like the Evan Williams horse is coming to beat him.
Can you call?
But he's not. To me, it's Tom Scudamore's body language. He thought about giving him a backhander there, but he doesn't. And when he jumps the last, he changes it, picks it out in his left hand. One, but his horse starts to quicken for him. And the further he's going, the more he's winning. And it's the distance they put between themselves and the third horse. I think this was probably a pretty decent Taunton novice hurdle.
I agree with you. I think they're both pretty nice horses.
Yeah.
And you've been mentioning American Sniper for a while. How about Jet Powered? Because we were talking, shall we put Lucia or shall we put Jet Powered in last week? I went with Lucia, but you wanted to talk about Jet Powered.
I did. I was really impressed with Jet Powered. I thought he was a bit keen early at Newbury. They went a decent enough gallop and he did eventually settle for Nico when he faced into the back straight. Watch this jump out of Nico's hands at the third last. He was good at the second last. Now, the opposition has fallen back. Last was his clumsiest jump, but I did like what I saw at Newbury, this fella, and that was decent enough ground. I thought he won as much up his sleeve as he'd like.
He's won a point, hasn't he? An interesting thing, Dan Skelton remarked to me after that race, the four-year-old Itak Blue was the runner-up there, and he said that he thinks quite a lot of that horse, and yeah, he was just beaten 11 lengths. So, and people were saying that they felt that was quite a deep race as well.
I would agree. I like Jet Powered.
Then there was Stay Away Faye later on the same day. This horse winning for Paul Nichols with He's a Geezer, Russian Ruler and Egbert in behind.
Yeah, funny horse. He got keen at this point. Harry Cobden sent him forward there and he ended up running a bit keenly with him for 100 or 150 yards here. But by the time he gets around into the back straight, Russian Ruler is in front. He's flat to the boards turning in Stay Away Faye. Russian Ruler had gone hard and eventually gets tired, but Stay Away Faye to me is a real stare, because he was going pretty much as fast as he wanted for a long, long way, and he's kept at it really well to beat He's a Geezer. Russian Ruler falls in a home, but or falls in a hole even. But I thought Stay Away Faye looked a really strong stare. More Abel Bartlett than Ballymore for me.
Yes, I think that's right. They were talking about Hermes Allen, the stable companion, coming back to Newbury for the Challo. Harry Cobden was thinking he'd rather stick to shorter distances for now with Stay Away Faye, but undoubtedly he has got the stamina for further, hasn't he?
Big
and
time.
That was shown.
Yeah.
And if you go back to third, Russian Ruler, I mean, he's a second season novice. He finished fifth in the Dovecot.
Yeah, must go back and trip.
Now we're going to head back to Ireland and take a look at Grange Clare West, Ruby.
Yeah, I've been off the track quite a while, Lydia. Sat in a maiden hurdle at Navan on Tri-Town Day, and probably further back than a lot of willies are ridden in maidens. Seen by the stands here, he's back in 7th or 8th. But he did sneak his way into the race, arrived going to the last hurdle with plenty of gusto, stood outside the wings, out of Paul Townend's hands, probably a bit longer maybe than Paul might have liked, but he galloped out well to the line and he did look impressive. Now, he obviously missed last season, but he came with a huge reputation and maybe he can fulfil it.
He's won a point, he's won a bumper, that was back in May 2021, and now after 547 days off, he's won his hurdles debut. He heads towards the Lawlers of Naas next in the early part of January, said Willie Mullins. Let's move on to I Know the Way You're Thinking. I quite like this run.
Yeah, won a four-year-old novice hurdle, well, not a novice hurdle, four-year-old hurdle at Goran Park. You've imagined in front Harlem Street in second, and I know the way you're thinking, who had beaten Lot of Joy at Cork first time up, and I think was always going to win here as well. Mark Walsh had looked to have Jack Kennedy covered in front of him. He has Paul Townend behind him, but even going to the last, and it's Mark's body language from here home. When he lands, he catches a hold of I Know the Way You're Thinking, pulls his whip out in his left hand. One, but doesn't even go for the second one. The response was immediate. He gets a nick in front. That was doing him.
OK, sticking to Goran Park, Kalanisi Star and Pink in the Park.
Yeah, Oliver McKiernan and Philip Enright. Kalanisi Star looked to have a really nice horse in their hands. Was handy all the way. Pink in the Park elected to follow Kalanisi Star. Jumped his way to the front at the third last hurdle. And again, a bit like I Know the Way You're Thinking, I think Kalanisi Star was doing enough in front. Pink in the Park looks to be going better at the second last, but Kalanisi Star jumped it well. You know, I think Oliver McKiernan has unearthed a fair one here, and I wouldn't be surprised if he turned up in the Lawlers in Naas as well. But I thought this was a good performance from Kalanisi Star, and I liked the way he hit the line.
I'm hoping that he does turn up there. I'm going to be heading to Naas for the first time for that meeting, so I'm really looking forward to that. So I'll have done Clonmel and Naas this season, so tour of tracks.
You're getting around, Lydia. You're getting around.
in the racing sense, let's have a look at Thurles next, shall we? This is Alette Tom, who's a second season novice.
I'm a little bit disappointed. Jumps to his right here, second hurdle. And then at the third hurdle, was awkward. Just for a horse with all the experience that Alette Tom has, I thought he would jump a little bit better and runs around then, going to the last hurdle. It was actually before the road, looked to have a good old look at it, jumped well when he got there. But to me, he showed too many signs of inexperience for a horse with so much experience. Could only win, but I would have preferred to see him be more professional.
I really liked his debut behind Vauban at the Dublin Racing Festival, but he was just mildly aggressive after that, and I'm just a little bit worried that he's not going to fulfil the promise.
I don't know. I think he can, but I want him to be more professional.
Another interesting one here in Jungle Pros. This is a mare that used to be with Nick Gifford. She's been vastly progressive for Gordon Elliott. This is her success at Navan.
Yeah, her fourth win. She won off 85, 97, 109. This is her winning off 125. And look how much she wins with up her sleeve. Jack Kennedy trying to make it look like he's moving
and
above
and not
her back.
Succeeding.
And not overly succeeding. She's in at Navan at the weekend off 142. But she is qualified for the Albert Bartlett and could be an old-fashioned Albert Bartlett mare.
She would be the old-fashioned type, yeah. They had an option with Carlisle on Sunday. They also entered in the Mayor's Hurdle, which looked very competitive at Cheltenham on the Saturday. But they're going for the Navan option.
Going for the money. It's the 100 grand race, isn't
it? Yes, yeah. And as you say, the Albert Bartlett, that is the old-fashioned horse. I was distinctly coming round to your argument last season that actually that race might be changing in character.
Quality, maybe. Yeah. Time will tell, but if she wins again this weekend, it's going to have some rating for a novice.
She really is. She's so fast progressive. Right, there's an Albert Bartlett trial, inverted commas, being run at Cheltenham this Saturday. Let's have a look at those. Outlaw Peter, the recent 19-length Exeter winner, an interesting one for Paul Nicholls and Harry Cobden. And we will hopefully be assessing what they've achieved this time next week. We're going to compare and contrast the Tingle Creek with the Henry VIII Novices Chase, and you'll remember that quite often the Novices races run quicker than the Tingle Creek. Not so this year. There isn't much in it, but they were run totally differently.
They were, and you can see it already. Look, the Tingle Creek is well ahead of the Henry VIII. Even Edward Stone, by the time we get to the second fence, is well clear of John Bond, last to first in the two different races. When they get down the hill to the third fence, John Bond's having a beautiful round for schooling in front. The Tingle Creek's much more competitive. John Bond coasts down and jumps it really well. But even if you watch the pace of the Tingle Creek from the water jump to the first railway, and you look at Tom Cannon and Edward Stone, and how he just, your eye was always drawn to him. But look how far behind John Bond is, just because of the way the races were run. They're completely different races. The last railway, you can see how far the Tingle Creek is ahead of the Henry VIII. But that's as far as it got, because it starts to diminish from there. Or maybe it was wider somewhere else, but it does start to diminish from there. Pond fence, Shishkin misses, John Bond is starting to close it up, but by the second last, he's eaten into it, and John Bond continues to eat into that advantage Edward Stone had all the way from their home.
It's particularly impressive the way that he kills whatever threat Boutil briefly presented to out, and how strongly he finishes. And it's the promise in that time, that section of the race that John Bond showed. I know he controlled the race in the early section, but how quickly he came home is very impressive and the signal of a good horse.
Yeah, but there's promise in everything John Bond did. And we have one other clip of John Bond jumping, and it's not him standing back like he did at the first and second fence. It's what John Bond does when he gets in close. First two fences in the back straight, he gets close to the first one, but when he lands, watch him go away from Boot Hill, even though he got close to the fence, and the second jump again in close, but watch the gap open to Boot Hill. His landing speed is out there.
I think he's the full package myself. I think Boot Hill's a pretty good horse. I'm quite a Boot Hill fan. But anyway, we'll come back to the novices in a moment. We are going to go back to the Tingle Creek and talk about Shishkin, because we asked you a question via social media. What should be Shishkin's primary target in 2023? The Champion Chase, the Ryanair Chase, the Gold Cup, or none of the above? And overwhelmingly, the Ryanair was chosen at 40%. Which would you have said, Ruby?
None of the above.
Why?
Because I think he'll go to the Denman.
And that will be his primary race of
20... I said the way he ran the other day, Nicky Henderson will be picking a target to make sure he wins a race with Shishkin.
Interesting. So that's essentially lowering sights and going up in trip.
He think you have to.
This is him at the start of the Queen Mother Champion Chase when everybody knew there was something wrong from a very early stage.
Yeah, he was beaten at the drop of the flag there. Even Paul Townham was thinking going to the first fence, I want to follow him, but he's not going anywhere. How do I stay following him? You know, there on landing at the back of the first fence. But that hasn't left my memory. And the Tingle Creek, whilst it was all hard to stay in there to the pond
that's
fence.
That was the point I was going to make.
Yeah, part is one thing, though. Just doesn't transfer into winning race.
It says the heart is still willing, though, and that is important. And Nicky Henderson's
reaction. Can the heart pump the blood fast enough to make the legs go quicker?
Well, Nicky Henderson was of the view that he was talking this time last year, 12 months ago, he was talking about the 2022 King George, wasn't he? It's always been quite prominent in his mind that Shishkin might need to step up in trip. Should we see what you all thought? Because we asked you for comments as well. This is Donny D saying the overreaction to his run in the Tingle Creek is ludicrous. If Nicky has him fit and ready come March, anything approaching sevens would be huge in the Queen Mother Champion Chase. That's his trip. Oh, I can't agree with that anymore, I'm afraid, Donny. Get him there, fit and firing, and he's a definite player. He wouldn't map in the Gold Cup.
Why wouldn't he? He's right.
In the Gold Cup?
Sorry. He could. Do I see him getting 3 1/4? I'd be surprised if he lines up in either.
Let's move on to Richard Hogan. He thinks the right race is the Ryanair, and if Alaho is not 100%, he could take some beating. The feeling is, his feeling is, he'll run in the Gold Cup because he doesn't think that Jim and Mary Donnelly have anything else for that race. If that's the case, he should run in the Cotswold as a prep to see if he stays. Goodness. For me, the most sensible option, says Giants Causeway, is to first run him left-handed against top-quality opposition over 3 miles to see whether he's up to running in the Gold Cup. Can't see Nicky running him in the Irish Gold Cup, though. Think he might have mentioned the Denman, ting, and the Ascot Chase instead. I'm not sure. I don't think he wants to go back to Ascot.
I agree with you, Giants Causeway.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good comment.
And we had to get one, didn't we?
Well, this is the front runner in Ruby's Prize tweet of the edition. Early reminders, Poptas says the Ascot Chase is the week after Denman, though, so no way he does both. Realistically, the best option is the Silvagnaco Conti in January and the Denman in February. Build up in increments. He doesn't look like a Gold Cup horse in the latter, bringing back the Ryanair.
See what common sense gets you?
You like those two?
The best, that one's even better.
Okay, so... the lead is exchanged up front in Ruby's top tweet of the edition. This is the betting for the Betway Queen Mother Champion Chase, in which Energumen is top at 6-4 and Edwardson is now the 5-2 second favourite. There's Fernie Hollow at 8-1. Where is he?
In Close Sutton.
He's not in the Hillyway. He wasn't in the Fortria. We haven't seen him at all. So
do we have the decks for the Hillyway? Of course we do. We're tomorrow, aren't we?
He's not there.
He wasn't entered.
No.
He's there, and yeah. Why he's not entered, I don't know. He's obviously not going there. Energumen is.
Let's take a look at Energumen last year in the Hillyway, because there was a question about how he might be ridden. I assumed that he would be bouncing out like he was in the race last year, not patiently ridden as he was in the Queen Mother Champion Chase.
I would assume the same, because this is down in grade, so I think I'd be surprised if he's not ridden the same way.
Let's move on to the Novice Chases next. So we've chatted John Bonn and Boo Till. It's now time to look at the other novices that have caught our eye during the past 7 days. There was a really competitive edition of the Drinmore Chase at Ferry House on Sunday, but it was run at a crawl.
Yeah, it was run steadily, all right, and can often happen. But no one wanted to go on. Mighty Potter was sort of wide on the outside. El Barra, I was surprised when Banbridge didn't go further forward, but Soft Ground probably scuppered him. Shadow Rider ended up making the run in. But Mighty Potter jumped his way almost to the lead at the fourth fence. Enniskerry made a mistake at that one. Down the hill here, watch Davy Russ in the middle in the yellow cap, three-stripe life. Hits the takeoff, sends him up in the air. And I actually think Davy moved his whole saddle to the left-hand side, so he couldn't get back on. Mighty Potter nodded at two fences down the side. He has a really good jump in him, but they were almost like half silly mistakes. Enniskerry again made another mistake there. But Mighty Potter, Guyard de Menil, having his first run since the Irish Grand National, appeared as the main challenger between the last two. But you'd like the way Mighty Potter did it. Now, I cribbed him, or crabbed him even, in Down Royal for his head carriage. It's the same here, but his jumping was considerably better. He still looks like he's heading off to the right. but he gets to the last fence, jumps it well, and sees it out well to beat Guyard de Menil. Banbridge, Authorised Art, adamantly chosen El Barrow, and the faller at the last was the Devil's Coachman. But decent enough performance, Lydia. Hard to knock him on that. And that reaction there, Jack Kennedy doesn't show huge emotion ever. Showed a bit there.
He did. It was a really good day for him, a grade one double. He's already, and this boggled my mind, he's already bettered this season his best ever previous totals in Irish seasons.
It's probably the longest time he's actually ever ridden for.
Without having injuries.
Without having an injury. And you'd hope to see him get a really good run over because he's an exceptional talent and you'd like to see him put some good runs together. He's up to 70-odd winners. He's a long way in front of Paul Townend in the Jockeys' Championship. If he continues at the pace he's going, he will be champion jockey.
He was talking about Mighty Potter and how he thinks that Dan Royal made a man of him and basically just made him grow up. But as you say, he's still distracted. You can see him all the way in the straight just looking around.
Yeah, and a better race might bring out a better horse.
Gael Dominic, obviously, you would imagine would be better. I mean, he's been third in a Brown Advisory, third in an Irish...
I'd say he'd improve for the run too.
Yeah, OK. And I think Banbridge might have been flat. I'm sure the ground probably was a complicating factor as well. But if you think how he bounced out in Goran and bounced out at Cheltenham, he was being niggled at the start by JJ Slevin.
He never looked... Didn't look the same horse anyway.
Yeah, and three-stripe life for you, obviously, would give a
free
pass.
I think Slevin moved on Davy.
Yeah,
Russell,
free pass.
And he couldn't get it back then.
Of course. Yeah. Right, Minella Crooner and I am Maximus. Now, Minella Crooner won, but he shouldn't have done.
No. Good jumper, Manila Crooner. Largy debut behind, makes a bad mistake at the first stretch, and Blackmore does well to stay on. But the second fence, I am Maximus in the black colours. That's the way he jumped a lot of defences. Jammed on, shimmied left. Here he is, fourth last, does it again. Second last, does it. Manila Crooner, to his credit, he can only do what he's supposed to do. Last fence, I am Maximus, hands it back to Manila Crooner again, who dug in, was tough and resolute. But I'd agree with you, I am Maximus gave that away.
Yeah, first time cheek pieces for Minella Crooner, and he's just about beating the horse that jumped wildly left all the time.
And jammed on to jump left. I wouldn't mind him just going left. He was jamming on, taking another stride, slowing it down as well as going left.
He used to be with Nicky Henderson and he jumped left at Exeter as well as a novice hurdler. So you'd expect him probably to go the other way around.
You would, yeah.
We've got a match to show you from Exeter. This was Gillino Bello versus City Chief for Nicky Henson. Gillino Bello obviously representing Paul Nicholls with Lorcan Williams on board.
Yeah, and he was quicker over the first couple than Nicky's horse. And obviously the race changes here. The horse down the inside, Nico de Bonville, does really well to stay on. Clouts it, sits down, stands up, and Nico stays aboard and continues in the race. Gillino Bello last ditch, they both jumped it really, really well. But look, in a match, and probably Gillino Bello was the better horse anyway, you can't give that advantage away and expect to win. But Gillino Bello did very little wrong other than possibly have a short tendency to go right.
Again, which he did at Wetherby as well.
Yeah.
He's in the mix for the Quarto Star, isn't he, for Ditchett?
Yeah, and that'll suit him that direction, won't it?
It will. He's had two little doddles around, though. It's going to be completely different.
Not his fault, unfortunately.
No, it isn't. I'm just talking about in terms of experience going into it, something completely different. Let's take a look at what's happening at the weekend. Cheltenham first. Oh, just three in the Beareen.com novice chase, but at least Monmiral is one of them. And then we've got the Clare and Davis at Navan as well. Oh, just one better. But then again, I suppose at least we have Hollow Games. No three-stripe life in that. He was entered at one point. We've got others to look forward to as well. Potentially appreciate
it. See, I think, I know Navan, it's a good card. Cheltenham, big meeting. But to me, we're getting too close to Christmas to have those kind of risks. It's just duplication, replication.
And you think you need to push back? It's probably more relevant to Ireland, I would say, than necessarily to Britain. And you think they need to push back a little bit more?
Claren Davis, this Navan meeting, eating is like, that's not a great tree.
Well, sort it out with your Irish Patent Committee.
And the Kemp Cheltenham race, why should Monmiral not be heading to the Wayward Lad or into Christmas? You need big names for the festival or racing at Christmas that you so want to have, yet you give them
a
option like that.
Other novice chases we're looking forward to include, hopefully, Appreciate It, the 2021 Supreme Novice Hurdle winner, who wasn't declared for Navan but is entered in Punchestown on Sunday.
Yeah, and he could go there. He might keep him for Christmas at this stage. It'll be interesting. Flamebearer obviously is in Navan against Journey With Me. Good Mare's novice chasing Cork on Sunday again as well. Be interesting to see what's declared in that, but there are some decent ones.
Absolutely. The trio that could be in there are Allegory Devassi, who's all... I mean, surely you agree she's a chasing type. Surely, Ruby.
See how she jumps.
She looked like she'd
Dino Blue, you wouldn't say it looked a chasing type, but I thought she was really impressive in Cork, the way she jumped, and even Pervious, who won well at Wexford. So Time will tell. That looks a really, really good race, that mare's novice chase.
It really does, impervious for Colm Murphy. Let's hope that all three of them, or at least two of the three, do turn up at Cork.
At least one.
Well, yeah, judging by the field size.
Sorry,
absolutely...
I actually meant I hope one meeting is on.
Oh, yes. Oh,
at
I see.
At least one meeting is on.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed, because otherwise there could be a lot of...
Could be a repeat.
Never. Goodbye. We'll be right back.